called Resolved, and the idea is spiritual disciplines, just making decisions here, even though I know we're several weeks into the new year, and I won't ask how your New Year's resolutions are going, but it is a time of year where we do think about making changes. We think about trying to establish new habits, a new way of living. Whether it be physically or spiritually, or even some of you academically, maybe some of you decided this year you're going back to school, or you're going to get that special training or that certification that you wanted, or you're going to read through the Bible this year, or you're going to spend more time praying, or you're going to take your wife out on a date night every week this year, or something like that. I saw some wives go, hey, I like that one. So this morning, as we step into the next one, I want to ask you a question. I don't know about you when you grew up, but I remember, did you ever have a friend who was only your friend when nobody else was around? You remember how much that hurt? Where, like, when you're in public and you're around people, they're like, maybe they're even pitching in on the mockery or just avoiding you or kind of ignoring you. But then when maybe your families were friends and their family would come over and they're your best buddy, but nobody's around. But then when you go back to school and see them the next day, you're like, hey, Billy, how are you doing? And they look at you like you're crazy. Or they pretend like they don't know you. Now for parents, maybe this happens the first time your kid smacks away your hand when you try and hold it in public. I'm sure that's kind of a sobering moment where they no longer want to embrace you publicly or hold your hand publicly. That hasn't happened to me yet. I mean, it's happened, but I don't think for that reason yet, where Lily doesn't like to hold my hand in the parking lot no matter what, because she wants freedom. So maybe it's already happened and I just don't want to face the facts yet. But that's a hard moment, isn't it? When someone that you think you have a friendship with, the moment you're in public, they don't want to acknowledge it. There's an inverse to that. What about the situation where you've got, and in our culture, we've actually put a term to this, where maybe what's publicly on display is not any sort of a reality privately. Where you've got someone who's, you know, maybe a big executive, very wealthy guy, or an actor or something, and he's got this wife who's significantly younger than him and quite beautiful, but then you find out years later that even though they were on all the red carpets together and went to all the parties and they're holding hands and they seem to be so perfectly matched and polite, but behind closed doors, he never talked to her and she felt like a prisoner in her own home. Our culture calls that relationship that she's a trophy wife. There's really nothing in reality behind closed doors, but publicly everything is perfect. They look like it's just a match made in heaven. And she's paraded around like a trophy. This morning, I want to talk to you a bit about prayer. You're probably wondering what in the world that introduction has to do with anything about prayer. Well, pray for me, because I'm going to try to make it all connect. I want to make a statement to you, and if you want to write it down on the back of your bulletin, there's a section for notes. And one thing I love to see, even in our small groups, but just as you sit and listen, if you listen to a message in general, listen for that one thing that sticks out to you, that one thing that just hits you strangely or in a good way, and you're just like, man, I've never thought of that before, and write that down. Because I consistently talk about how little we retain as human beings with what we hear. But if that one thing hits you and you don't write it down, you might not even be able to remember that one thing. Or someone's like, oh, you should have heard the message Sunday. It was so good. There was this one thing that he said, but I've lost it. But I know it was one thing. So when we do our small group discussion time, one of the first questions is, what was one thing that stuck out to you? So you'll always have an answer to that if you write down the one thing that sticks out to you. So, if there's one thing for you to write down today, it's this sentence. Our private practice of prayer leads to genuine public passion and power. And I could have even gone further with the P's, but I tried to not make it totally alliterated. Our private practice of prayer leads to genuine public passion and power. Our private practice of prayer. Let me explain this phrase now to you. In Matthew chapter 6, Matthew 5 and 6, Jesus delivers what most people would share and tell you is the greatest sermon ever delivered by anyone of all time, called the Sermon on the Mount. In it, he walks these people through truths that they had not even considered. In fact, he takes the law that they believed and were following to this Jewish, mostly Jewish audience, and he takes it and he goes further than what the law demanded, which is powerful. He says, you know, you've heard it said, you know, pay back evil for evil, an eye for an eye or tooth for a tooth. What I say is, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. He took it further. He took it further than the law demands. You've heard it said, you shall not commit adultery. Well, I say that if you look at a woman lustfully in your heart, you've already So he took the law that was mostly externally practiced and took further, and he got down to the level of the heart. So this is the Sermon on the Mount. And Jesus taught as one with authority. So he brought a new teaching. He took what they knew, you've heard it said, and then he expanded upon it by saying, but I say. So walks through this passage, or as we walk through the passage, and as he taught on this Sermon on the Mount, listen to what he says when he describes praying. Listen to verse 5 of Matthew chapter 6. And when you pray, you must not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners, that they may be seen by others. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. And here's the key. But when you pray, go into your room, shut the door, and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Now, this verse has given rise to people having prayer closets in their homes, or maybe that one space that you like to go early in the morning to pray, or late at night, or just to get away in the middle of the day, where there's no distractions, there's no phones to ring, there's no computer to tempt, there's no thing around you that's going to take you away from just focusing on God. And many of us maybe have gone through a season where we've set up a room like that and we prayed in it regularly, and then we go through other seasons where that's where the vacuum goes and that's where some other things go. I remember at my church in Minnesota, we were trying to find a prayer room to pray in for 40 days straight. And this is my church in Minnesota. And I remember we're asking, we're trying to think of different areas, and then all of a sudden someone said, well, actually, you know we have a prayer room, right? No, we have a prayer room? I've been on staff here for 3 years. I've never even heard of this. And they said, here, follow me. And they took me in, and it was like worship paraphernalia storage room. You know, there was like wedding ivy and pillars and some extra chairs, some broken chairs, some microphone stands. And we got over the sadness of that, and then we moved everything out and we made that into our little prayer room, this little secret room that was just set aside for nothing other than prayer. And so this idea, when you find this area in secret, but your Father who sees what's done in secret will reward you. So why the emphasis on the location? Why does it matter to God? What does that even mean? What should it matter if you're in secret or if you're in public? This makes sense with relationships, but for some reason we have trouble transposing it into our spiritual lives. Think about this for a moment. Think about those of you who are married, and those of you who are dating, those of you who have brothers and sisters and moms and dads. That I think we've covered basically everyone. Think about for any friendship, relationship, marriage, whatever. Think about how many hours you've spent talking to that person. Most relationship experts will tell you what the number one key component is to a successful relationship is good communication. Right? If you're not communicating, things are going downhill in a hurry. If you hear this phrase, well, he just won't talk to me at all, that's a serious danger sign. That's a red light flashing on the dashboard. So you think about that. You think about, for you married couples, think about it for a moment. If you had to ballpark how many hours you have spent talking to your spouse
since you first started dating. Can you even imagine what that number would be? Staggering. I mean, just inestimable. There's no way for you to even possibly put a number to it. I mean, all of the, when you're dating, all of the phone calls, for some of you, the letters that you wrote, the time on the phone, now in more modern times, the texting and the phone calls and the instant messaging and the Skyping and all these different ways we do it, you do not get married unless you have spent an unbelievable amount of time communicating with each other. Because that's how you build a relationship. And when do you do that most often? Do you do it in front of a large group? Do you talk about your day with your spouse in front of 50 people? No. There are people who do that, and we call them weirdos. Sorry, we're all just going to leave. You guys work this out.
We're just going to go over here because this is really odd.
No. You wait until no one's around. For those of us with small kids, you know, with that just that hands-on job when they're in bed at night and you just kind of you see a bed in the distance and you're like, I think if I just fall now, I might land on a mattress. You know, before you go completely unconscious for the night, you talk about your day for a few minutes. But nobody's around. When you're on the phone talking to each other, when you're dating, hopefully no one's listening in on you, although moms and dads maybe could share a time or two where they've peeped on that, when they used to have extensions and things like that. No one's around. Number one, no one else cares. But number two, it's not appropriate. You are sharing your life with another person. And it's hour after hour. You want to know their hopes. You want to know their dreams. You want to know the highs. You want to know the lows. You want to know their backstory. You want to know the fears. You want to know, what does it look like for them? What does their faith look like? What is their relationship with God like? That is all through the hard work of communication. No one knows your spouse or your boyfriend or girlfriend or your mom or dad better than you do because you've spent time talking to them. Have you ever met that person that tries to be your best friend like right away? Whoa, hey, calm down. I just met you. There's kind of an understood order here that goes along. We got to build this relationship over time. You don't just hop straight to inner circle BFF. It's not how it works. Maybe when you're a little kid, it's like, oh, that's my best friend now. But as we get older, we know we have friends that we trust and we have friends that we don't tell them anything we want to keep secret because they are a leaky sieve of information because they've got friends who depend on them for all the information about you. Communication. It makes sense. When communication breaks down in a relationship, if you're dating, all of a sudden you run out of things to say or you just stop talking, you're like, we just weren't on the same page. Usually that derails that relationship at some point. And when you're married and you run into problems in that area, it starts to, hopefully you need to bring in a third person to do what? Get you talking about your problems. It's all about communication. So it makes total sense. I could spend 20 more minutes talking about why communication is important to have with each other for successful relationships. And yet, why do we then, when we think about God, think it is more than enough to pray before a meal and pray publicly, and that's it? Can you even imagine for a moment if the only time you talked to your spouse was, thank you for this meal, sweetie, and in public saying, this is my wife, and I love her, and we're in this together, and you said it in front of a group, and that was it. The rest of your time you spent ignoring her, not thinking about her, not talking to her, not involving her in any details of your life. And yet, how many of us have gone through seasons where that's exactly how we've treated our God? We only thank him for our food. And we only pray to him when somebody else asks us to pray publicly. What kind of depth is there in that relationship in practical terms? It's not going to grow. It's not going to grow. But yet, when God says, go into your room, close the door in the secret where no one else can see you but only God. God knows in that moment there's no pretending. There's no showboating. There's no hypocrisy because you're not there to impress anyone else.
The only thing you could possibly do is brag to people about how much time you spent in your prayer closet, which would be weird for all of us. Great, okay. I'm very excited to hear you have this prayer time every morning, but it's like, but you still have to do the work in the prayer closet. You still have to go in and share your hopes. And so God is saying to you, show me the reality of this relationship in the secret. Show me that you trust me when nobody else is around. Show me that you love me when no one else is around. Share your heart, share your hopes, share your dreams, share your fears, share your brokenness, share your praises with me when nobody else is around to hear them. Because that will demonstrate the reality of your relationship with God. It is demonstrated through the private practice of prayer. It makes sense when we think about anyone else in our life. And yet, why does that sound so profound when we talk about God? We need to stop separating the two and start to realize a relationship is a relationship. And the depth, what you pour into it, is going to deepen it. And if we just save it for public settings, it's not going to have a reality to it. Our private practice of prayer leads to genuine passion and power. But then the flip side comes. But should it all be secret? So we've elevated the secret prayer times and we've said that's the best. That's where you really deepen it. Let's go back to that friend. That friend that was only your friend when nobody else was around. What did that say to you that when you got around other people, or maybe you were the friend that disowned this secret friend? I'm talking about the secret friend that you made up. I'm talking about the actual living, breathing person that you treated great when no one was around, but when you were in public, you just pretended like you didn't know them or you put them down. If you were the person that was put down and the secret friend, how did that make you feel? Didn't that make you doubt if anything was real? It makes you doubt, like, well, why are you ashamed of me? Why don't you want to be my friend in public? And if you were the mean one who pretended he didn't exist, what was it about that person that you didn't want to acknowledge? Maybe they weren't cool enough, or maybe they were going to cost you something. Maybe your other friends that you really wanted to like you wouldn't like you enough as much if they saw you being a friend to this one they've outcast. So you think about it. You think a genuine relationship is not just developed in the secret, but also in the public space. It also is revealed. Think about these terms. You can almost get a little confused when you read what Jesus had to say in Matthew chapter 5, verse 16. He says, in the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. So in the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. So think about good works, or another translation says good deeds, or your acts of righteousness is another one. You think about that. What would be some acts of righteousness? Would be things like what's specifically called out in this passage: fasting, giving, prayer. Wouldn't those be considered acts of righteousness? Wouldn't those be ways that you're demonstrating your relationship with God? So in Matthew 6, verse 6, it says, pray in secret, not like the guy in the corner. But then Matthew 5, 18 says, do these acts of righteousness before other people so that they may see him and give glory to God. Well, which is right? Are you supposed to do it publicly so that people will see your behavior and glorify God, or are you supposed to do it privately? I think that the answer comes down to the heart motivation. Remember what it says in Matthew chapter 6, verse 1. It says, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them. For then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. You see how carefully Jesus explains? Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order. So the purpose of doing it in front of them is to be seen by them.
It comes down to the heart. It says, if you're doing these acts of righteousness before other people in order that they will see you, in order they'll be impressed by you, in order that they will think highly of you, in order that they will think, man, look at this guy. Listen to how eloquently he's preaching or praying on the corner. Listen to how, my goodness, look at his face. He's obviously been fasting because, you know, his eyes and his, I can tell he's hungry. And he's moaning and walking around holding his belly. I can tell this guy is really godly because of how he's acting. But Jesus says, if you are doing that, then you are an actor. You are only doing that, playing a role in order to be seen by men, so that they will be impressed. In fact, it's interesting, Jesus is the only one, or Jesus was the first one to take the term Hippocrates, which was a term used to describe actors in that first century culture. And Jesus took that Greek term and applied it to those who were pretending to be something that they were not. And he took it to the level of the heart with those who are practicing their religious deeds publicly when privately there was no reality. What did he say to the Pharisees? Your lips are quick to praise me, but your hearts are far from me. I think that the key, if we think about, so how do we reconcile this? How do we reconcile, go and pray in secret, develop this relationship in secret so nobody sees, but then also do it publicly so that people see your light and give glory to God? I think the key is found in the difference between two words. It says, let your light shine before men. Before men. But it doesn't. It says, let it shine before men, not for men. Do you see that? Let your light shine before men, but not for men. This is a perfect idea. Think about this moment for 1 second. Think about that couple that you see. They just got married, and they come into church, and they make us all feel a little bit uncomfortable because they can't keep their hands off each other. They're snuggling, and they're whispering, and they're kissing, and they're just, you're like, my goodness gracious. But yet there's something inside of us where we realize, you know what? They don't even know we're here. Or it's, I have the rare opportunity of standing right about here in the many weddings that I've officiated and watching the bride come down the aisle. Now, I'm standing directly in front of her, but she's not looking at me. She's looking at this guy standing right here. She's not looking at anybody out there, even though Aunt Matilda drove 1,200 miles and this guy came from this area and all these people came in for this moment. We are just witnesses to their love. The rest of us might as well not even be there. They are getting married before us, but not for us. We are witnesses to genuine passion and love. What we see publicly is an overflow of their private love for each other. They can't help it. They can't contain it. They can't pretend that they don't completely love each other. And so when they're in public, of course they're holding hands and they're stealing kisses and they're whispering in each other's ears and they're giggling and driving the rest of us nuts. You know why? Because we wish we had that. We remember a time when we did have that. Our private practice of prayer leads to genuine public passion and power. When you spend private, practiced, set aside time, intentional time with God, the more you do that, the more time you spend praying to Him, the more your heart becomes like God's heart. The more the things that break God's heart break your heart. The more your heart beats for the things that His heart beats for, the more you want to give your life to Him. Because I don't know if you've noticed this, but the longer you pray, the less you can possibly pray about yourself. If you try and pray for more than a half hour, you run out of things to say about yourself. And now you got to start praying for those in the next level out, your family and your friends, and then, boy, then your church, and then maybe the town you live in. And you're like, man, look at this. The further I go, the further my prayer goes. Now I'm praying for my state. Now I'm praying for my country. Now I'm praying for the world. And these circles get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and you start to get the heart of God.
the more time you spend with him, the more intimate your relationship becomes with him. The deeper it becomes. The closer you are to him. And then when you get into a public setting, your heart and your love for God overflows before other people, but not for other people. It's your love for God that drives you to worship him with abandon and with passion. It's your love and intimacy with God that leads you to bow your head and pray at work and share your faith with your coworkers and your friends, because why wouldn't you? If they asked you if you're married, wouldn't you tell them about how much you love your wife? Wouldn't you tell them all about your children and show them all the pictures on your phone? Why? Because you love them. And you could not possibly keep that inside. But yet, how often when we're asked a question that invites us to share about our relationship with God, does our reaction change? Does my reaction change? Why do I say to someone, if they meet me and not Angela, why do I say to them without hesitating that by meeting me and not my wife, you are just getting to know half the story, and I promise you, it's not the good half. Without her, I am not whole, I'm not complete. We are one flesh, we are one, and we are together, and you've got to get to know us together to understand the whole story. Why don't I say that about God? Why don't I talk about Jesus that way? When someone asks me about my love of hobbies or sports or whatever it may be, why don't I say yes, but that's not the whole story. Really, my greatest passion, my greatest joy, the biggest thing about my life is my relationship with Jesus. And to not know that part of me is to not truly know me. Our private practice of prayer leads to genuine public passion and power. We see that in the life of Elijah. Do you remember after he told Ahab that there was going to be a famine? He leaves and he goes and he stays with a widow at Zarephath. And he's there and they are feeding him, because there's this Middle Eastern ethic of hospitality. They're feeding him and they had nothing. And so it's costing them to feed Elijah. And there's a miracle keeping the oil going. And then we read that this little boy dies. And Elijah, everyone's gathering around this little boy, he's just died. And what does Elijah do? He sends everyone out. He says, get out, everyone get out. He goes upstairs by himself and prays privately to God, stretches himself out on the boy, prays to God that God would bring him back, and God does it. Do you know what he does right after that? Right after that happens, he says, okay, goodbye, we'll see you later. He heads to Mount Carmel. Stands in front of all of Israel, 900,000 people plus, gathered at the foot of Mount Carmel. And he prays and asks God to send fire down from heaven in front of the entire nation. You want to talk about a risk for humiliation, a risk for your own death, a risk to look really stupid if God does not answer. But Elijah stands in front of the whole nation, because you know why? His private practice of prayer led to genuine public passion and power. He privately asked God to do something, and he privately spent time on his knees getting to know God more and asking him to do powerful things. And when he privately asked God to heal this boy and God did it, Elijah said, now I'm going to see you do something public. And I'm going to stretch myself out on this nation. I'm going to put my neck on the line. I'm going to go up against 450 prophets of Baal in front of the entire nation. And God, if you don't come through, I'm dead. He publicly prayed, and God sent fire. And then, it's beautiful, if you read that passage, it says that he asked God to send down fire. He sent down fire, and it not only consumed the altar that the bull was on, it also consumed the stone altar it was on, and it licked up all the water in the trench that was around it, which Elijah had dumped on it to make sure that it wasn't too easy for God. Then what does Elijah do? He publicly puts his head between his knees and prays that God would end the drought. Publicly, in front of all these people. This wasn't even the bet. This was far beyond the bet. the contest was that God was greater than Baal and that God could burn up this offering. But then Elijah says, now God, show them who you really are. Go beyond. He puts his head between his knees and he prays. And all of a sudden, you know, over the sea, they see this little cloud. It says in the text, the size of a fist. And it comes across and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And down comes the rain. And then for good measure, Elijah tucks his tunic into his belt and runs in front of Ahab's chariot 24 miles because it says that God's spirit was upon him. 24 miles, dead sprint. That's impressive. I get tired driving 24 miles, so that's quite a challenge to me personally. As we think through this series, as we think about resolving to deepen our relationship with God this year, it really does begin with our prayer lives. It really begins. The evidence of our relationship with God can be found in our prayer lives when nobody else is around. And then when we're public, when we're out among everyone, we can't contain our passion for God. It's genuine. It's real. It's not forced. It's not pretend. It's not doing something to get people's approval. Those acts of righteousness are being done before men, but not at all for men. You are witnessing the passion of a bride locking eyes on her groom. We're going to close our time this morning with a song. A song that deals with this exactly. It's called Beautiful. And the idea is locking our eyes on Jesus. And when we fix our eyes on him, everything else seems to just fall away. And our passion for him, that is developed in the secret, that is developed in the quiet times, that's developed in our prayer closet, evidence in our public worship, in our public times, because we cannot contain the passions in our heart. We can't hide it. Have you ever felt so just full of love for God and full of passion for him that you're singing a song and you're like, you want to yank the pew out of the ground? You're just like, oh man, oh, I just want to worship you so much. And so it makes sense when you think of David, when it says that David danced before the Lord because he was so excited to serve God. He was so humbled and so enamored with God that he just didn't care what anyone thought of him. His passion drove him to do something publicly that annoyed and embarrassed some people. But he said, I'm not embarrassed. I'm not ashamed. I'll even get worse than this because I love God. I'll get even more undignified than this. I will worship him with all he's given to me. That doesn't start in the public setting. That starts in the private setting. You may not have enough space in your home for a prayer closet. Your prayer closet may be your only closet and it's full of clothes. Find a place that you can be with God. Maybe it's on your drive to work. Have you ever prayed out loud to God while driving, sitting in traffic? People think you're insane. Or they think you have Bluetooth in your ear. That's kind of nice. So you can just do that. Be like, I got God in my earphone here. So maybe it's your drive to work. Or maybe it's those few minutes during the nap time in the afternoon. Or maybe it's first thing in the morning. I don't want to tell you when. There's no prescription of when you should do it. Although we know that Jesus did it. Remember Jesus did it. It says Jesus got up, as usual, by himself to pray. He left the disciples. And what I love is, if you look at the miracle of Lazarus, remember what Jesus says? He says, in front of everyone, he says, Father, I thank you that you are hearing me right now. I thank you that you hear me when I pray to you. He said, I'm not saying this. I'm saying this, God, for their benefit. I'm including them in our relationship. But his relationship was forged in the early hours of the morning, deepened with nobody else around, on his knees, praying to his Father to do powerful things in the world. I pray that we would resolve this year to deepen our walk with Jesus through our private prayer time. Our private practice of prayer leads to genuine public passion and power. I pray that would be true of us as a church. I'd love for someone to look at us and be like, wow, Calvary, that is a praying church. Because there's no telling what we can do if we pray. God, we love you so much. I thank you for this truth this morning. Thank you for the challenge it is to me personally. I want my relationship with you to be a reality, both privately and publicly, God. I pray that you would, through your Spirit, remind us, convict us of this truth, invite us into a deeper walk with you. God, it's so exciting that you want more of us. You want our time. You want to hear from us. Your word even says to pray without ceasing. You want to hear it all. You want every seemingly mundane detail from our day, as well as our hopes and dreams, our brokenness and our fear, our successes and our failings. You want to hear it all. And in that process, you're going to deepen our relationship with you and our passion for you and the power of our prayer time with you. Thank you, God, that you want more time with us. I thank you for sending your son Jesus to die for us so that we can approach your throne of grace with confidence and we can have direct access to you, God, through Jesus. It's in his Jesus' powerful name that we ask it. Amen.